The term karma in Sanskrit, or kamma in Pali, refers to a volitional or intentional action. An action which is performed with conscious motive or volition. It is a force which is generated through our thoughts, speech, and body actions. It may be wholesome or unwholesome, good or bad, depending on the factors which condition our minds at the time of performing the action. An action is said to be bad, immoral, unwholesome, or unskillful when the mind is conditioned by the tendencies of craving or greed, anger or hatred, and delusion. It is good, moral, wholesome, or skillful when the mind is conditioned by generosity, loving-kindness, and wisdom. The law of karma can be simply stated as good begets good, evil begets evil. When we perform a good, a wholesome, or skillful action, we experience some kind of force that makes us feel somewhat calm, composed, and peaceful. On the other hand, when we perform a bad, an unwholesome, or unskillful action, we experience in our hearts some uneasiness, somewhat gross and restless feeling, even remorseful at times. According to the law of karma, our present life is the result of our past existence, and the future will be the result of our present. We are actually the sum total of our past thoughts, speech, and body actions. What we will be in the future will be the result of our present thought, speech, and body actions. Our present lives are conditioned by the past actions, and our future will be conditioned by the present actions. In other words, our karmic forces are constantly molding us. This is how we account for the differences among individuals around us. How one is born in a poor and miserable family, living in a miserable condition, even without the basic requirements of life, and how another is born in the lap of comforts and luxuries. How some are born genius, others dull and sometimes idiot. How some are strong and healthy and others weak and sickly. How some are born ugly and others good-looking. The law of cause and effect can explain all these differences and inequalities. The law of karma operates on the basis of conditionality. Things do not happen simply by chance or entirely through fatalism. In other words, when certain causes or conditions arise, we will see the arising of certain effects. All the sufferings that we go through in life do not happen by chance. Neither is it totally predetermined or entirely fated. Happiness and sorrow all arise dependent on causes and conditions. Verse number 1 of the Dhammapada says, if a person thinks, speaks, or acts in an unwholesome or unskillful manner, conditioned by greed, hatred, or delusion, then the unwholesome consequences or suffering follows him as the wheels of the cart follows the hooves of the ox that draws the cart. If, on the other hand, one thinks, speaks, and acts in a wholesome and skillful manner, when conditioned by the absence of greed, hatred, and delusion, but flowing with generosity, loving-kindness, and wisdom, then the wholesome consequences or happiness follows him, just as the shadow follows the man. When a person leads a moral and wholesome way of life by avoiding killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, lying, and the indulgence of intoxicants, he or she is protected from the harmful effects of such unwholesome actions. Moreover, when a person avoids evil and do the good, his or her mind is naturally free from remorse, is naturally calm and composed. The mind that is calm and composed is conducive to concentration, and the concentrated mind is naturally capable of analysis and contemplation, paving the way for the development of wisdom and insights, which leads to one's deliverance or liberation from the samsaric cycle of birth and death. The whole process of deliverance or liberation in Buddhism can be explained in terms of the law of cause and effect. Although we say that according to the law of karma, good begets good, evil begets evil, we do come across good people who suffer various misfortune, while some of the wicked and cunning ones appear to prosper and enjoy their lives. So we should not come to immediate conclusions about the workings of karma, because the working of karma cannot be simply understood by our rational thinking minds. We need to go beyond conceptual thinking to have a clearer understanding of the workings of karma. The actions which we perform may not necessarily give rise to immediate effects. Some actions may give rise to results only after some time within this lifetime. Some may only ripen in the next life, and still others may ripen in successive births. This phenomena can be compared to the germination of seeds. The seeds of some plants germinate very quickly. Some may take a longer time. Alfalfa seeds, for example, grows almost immediately within 2 or 3 days. But the seeds of mango or avocado plants may take quite some time to germinate. So when a kind and virtuous person suffers, he suffers not because of the wholesome deeds which he has done. He suffers because of certain evil or unwholesome actions which he has done in the past, either in the immediate past or in the remote past, that is, in his previous lives. Although he might have forgotten about the actions which he had committed, the actions have not yet forgotten him. This is how we explain why some good people may encounter various misfortunes and sufferings, and on the other hand, how a wicked and cunning person may be enjoying his life. The wicked and cunning person enjoys his life not as a result of the wicked actions, but because of some good or wholesome action which he has done before. When the unwholesome karma ripens, he will certainly reap the unwholesome consequences. According to the Dhammapada, verses 119 and 120, even an evildoer sees good as long as evil ripens not. But when it ripens, then he sees the evil results. In a similar manner, even a good doer sees evil as long as good ripens not. But when it bears fruit, then the good one sees good results. We can gain some further understanding of karma by studying its various classifications. According to the type of results that it produces, or the role or function that it plays in influencing our lives, we can consider 4 classifications. First, there is what we call regenerative or janaka karma, that karma which conditions future birth. Then there is a supportive or upattambaka karma, which assists or maintains the results of already existing karmas. Then the third is the counteractive or upapilaka karma, which suppresses or modifies the results of the reproductive karma. Then there is the destructive or upaghataka karma, which destroys the force of existing karma and substitutes its own resultants. In the commentary to the Majjhima Nikaya of the Sutta Pitaka, generative or janaka karma is compared with a farmer sowing seeds, and the supportive or upatthambaka karma is compared with the irrigation, fertilizing and maintenance activities. The counteracting or upapelaka karma is compared with a drought that causes a poor harvest, and the destructive or upaghataka karma is compared to the fire that destroys the whole harvest. Another illustration can be like this: the rebirth of Devadatta into a royal family was due to his good generative karma. His becoming a monk and attaining to high spiritual powers was a good supportive karma. But his intention of killing the Buddha was a counteractive karma. And his causing a split in the order of Sangha, a schism, was a destructive karma, and because of which he was reborn in a suffering state. Another classification of karma is according to the time at which results are produced. There is the karma that ripens within this very lifetime. There is karma that ripens in the next life. And there is also karma that will ripen in successive lives. These three types of karma are bound to produce results, just as a seed that will germinate and grow. However, for a seed to germinate, certain factors or conditions are necessary, such as light, heat, water, soil conditions, and so on. When the conditions are not favorable, certain seeds will not germinate. It may die off or become no longer viable. This type of karma is called ahosi karma, that is, karma which is ineffective. All those actions which we have done without generating much thought, much intention, their energy or force generated is of low intensity. When conditions are not favorable, these karmas become ahosi. That is, they become ineffective and can no longer produce results. If you can understand this phenomena, you will realize that we all have the ability to clear off many of such karmas in this category by avoiding bad company and by practicing mindfulness and sense restraint. When we are mindful and able to restrain our senses, and when in the midst of good spiritual friends, the conditions around us will be such that they will not be favorable for the ripening of such weaker, unwholesome karmas. They will be rendered ineffective. And there are many such karmas in this category, which we have generated in this lifetime as well as in our past lives. When we are in bad company, we are often negligent, not mindful, and unrestrained in our senses. So even the weaker karmas which we have generated in the past will ripen and take effect. There will also be the tendencies to generate more grievous karma. There is another classification according to the priority of results, that is, when which karma will ripen first. There is the serious or weighty or garuka karma, which produces its resultant in this present life, or if not, in the next life. From the negative aspect, there are five specific actions which belong to this category. They are the killing of mother or the killing of father, the murder of a holy person or arahat, the wounding of a Buddha, and the creation of a schism in the Sangha, which of course can only be committed by a fully ordained monk. On the positive aspect, when one practices meditation and is able to develop right concentration through the development of jhanas or mental absorption, such actions are also considered very serious and weighty. They will produce resultants more speedily than those actions generated by ordinary, unrefined mental states. The good results will definitely take effect. There is also what we call the death proximate karma, which is the action which one does at the moment just before death, either physically or mentally. Mentally by thinking of one's own previous good or bad actions, or having good or bad thoughts. In the absence of any weighty karma, this death proximate karma will determine the condition of the next birth. Then there is the habitual karma, which is the action which one does again and again. This karma, in the absence of death proximate karma, produces and determines the next birth. And there is also the reserved or the residual karma. This is the last in the priority of results. It is the unexpended, the residual karma of an individual, and it conditions the next life if there is no habitual karma to operate. There is also the classification of karma according to the place in which the results are produced, namely, immoral karma, which produces effect in suffering states or in the planes of miseries. Moral karma, which produces its effect in sensual realms, such as the realms of Manusaloka or the human realm, or the Devaloka or celestial realms of existence. There is also the moral karma, which produces its effect in the realms of form or rupa loka, and the moral karma, which produces its effect in the realms of the formless or arupa loka. An important point to understand is that, as long as one keeps generating karma, rebirth will take place. It is only when one goes beyond karma that one is able to transcend the samsaric cycle of birth and death. How do we go beyond karma, beyond good and bad karma? Remember what the Buddha taught. Sabba papassa akkaranam kusalasa upasampada sacitta pariyo lappanam etang buddhana sasanam. That is, to avoid from all evil, to do the good, and to purify one's own mind. This is the teachings of all Buddhas. It is through the purification of one's mind that one is able to eventually transcend good and evil actions. And the way to do this is through the Noble Eightfold Path. Right understanding, right thoughts, right speech, right actions, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. Traditionally, we would explain these eight path factors in terms of sila, samadhi, panya. Sila refers to right speech, right body actions, and right livelihood. Samadhi refers to right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. And panya refers to right understanding and right thoughts. The function of these eight path factors is to purify the mind from the tendencies of greed, hatred, and delusion. When we restrain our speech by avoiding lying, slander, harsh, and frivolous talk, and our actions by avoiding killing, stealing, and sexual misconduct, and we resort to righteous means of livelihood, the tendencies of greed, hatred, delusion will not be able to manifest at the level of speech and body actions, thereby avoiding harming, transgressing oneself and others. However, the practice of sila alone is not enough. Even if we were to remain totally silent and restrained in all our bodily actions, the tendencies of greed, hatred, and delusion can still manifest at the mind or mental level. Hence the need to develop samadhi, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. This will effectively prevent the tendencies of greed, hatred, delusion from manifesting at the mental level. But still, this practice alone is not enough, because once we get out of our meditative and concentrated states of mind, once we lack the effort and mindfulness, the tendencies of greed, hatred, delusion can still arise. Hence the necessity for the next level of training, that is the development of paññā, or wisdom, which comprise of right understanding and right thoughts. Only through right understanding and right thoughts that we will develop the necessary wisdom and insights to understand and realize the true nature of our existence and the reality of the world around us, to see the universal characteristics of anicca, dukkha, anatta, or impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, and non-self. Seeing the emptiness of all component things, we will develop the maturity of mind and be able to let go of things. We will then stop generating tanha, or the craving for sensual desires, the craving for existence as well as for non-existence. Then we will stop generating karma. Whatever activities arise from the pure mind, through wisdom and compassion, they are merely pure actions, which are called kriyas. These are pure actions which transcend good and evil. Even when one has practiced up to this stage, one is still not free from the effects of past karma. One may have stopped generating new karmas, but one is still not free from the effects of previous karmas. Those who are free from greed, hatred, and delusion, such as the arahants, they are also not free from the effects of karma which they have generated in the past. The difference being that those who are liberated from greed, hatred, delusion, they are able to face, to endure the ripening of past bad karma with a sense of equanimity. Even the all-enlightened Buddha is not free from sickness, old age, and death, but he is free from all mental pains and sufferings. There may be pains and discomfort caused by the physical body, but the mind is free from all pains and sufferings. A liberated mind is one which is free from craving. It no longer clings to the body as I, my, or mine, and there is no longer the feeling of I and mine. So the body may be subject to decay, but the mind is completely free from fear, free from pain. At this point, there is only suffering, no sufferer. There is only feeling, no feeler. When we reflect and consider the enormous amount of karma which we have generated from life to life, we will soon realize how important it is for us to wake up as soon as possible to liberate ourselves from the samsaric cycle of birth and death. This is the very message the Buddha gave just before he left this world and attained Mahaparinibbana. He said, Vaya dhamma sankhara apamadena sampadeta. Impermanent, transient, are all component things. Work out your deliverance with heedfulness or mindfulness.